Hello, everyone, and welcome to the second episode of Erasmus podcast on circular economy. Today, it's my great pleasure to have a very good friend of mine and a great colleague, Kastub. Kastub Tapa is a PhD candidate, currently finished his thesis at the Copernicus Institute of Sustainable Development, that's at Utrecht University in the Netherlands. And his collaborative research incorporates justice, equity, and sustainability when it comes to the circular economy transition. As a good friend of mine, he also likes mountains and equality. So I'm super happy you're here, Kastub, and you took the time.
Thank you, Ed, for the invitation. Always happy to be with you.
Thanks. All right, so I'm very familiar with your research, but maybe you would like to give a bit more detail to our listeners on what you understand by circular economy.
For me, circular economy is just one of the many transition narratives that humanity needs and has been coming up with such narratives throughout history. For instance, we have this sustainable development. Everybody knows about it. Sustainability, we have green growth, eco-modernism, all kinds of transition narratives that proposes a better world for humanity. And for me, circular economy is one of these narratives. But since 2015, it has been widely popular in the EU, but also globally. So what makes it different than other narratives is the massive popularity of circular economy.
Okay, so what you're saying is basically we're not really reinventing the wheel here. It's some kind of narrative that fits into other sustainability narratives we've been constructing throughout the world. But this one has a lot of publicity on it.
That's true. I don't think this is something new. We are packaging some old ideas, modifying to the newer context. Of course, something that might have worked 40 years ago now needs modification given the new context. And then we're just making this a bit more sexier package. And that's why I think it's a bit more popular. I can tell you that my PhD research is in a group of 15 PhDs, all exploring circular economy. So 15, at least 3 years of the PhD, 4 years. So that's about 40, 45, 48 years of their lives together dedicated to circular economy. So you can imagine how popular the topic is. And our PhD is just one example of many different things. So that's circular economy and the way I understand it, of course.
Yeah, that's a very interesting way to put it, with the 45 years accumulated. That's so true. Well, now you brought into discussion your broader PhD program. Can you maybe in a nutshell describe what you're specifically looking at, what you've been actually researching for the past 3 years?
So one of the many things circular economy proposes is to retain the value of material for as long as possible. So the quite popular closing the loop or make it circular means that you don't make waste. And if you make waste, you make sure that the waste is somehow converted into resource so that you close the loop instead of the old linear way of doing things. My research particularly looks at what happens to the waste when it's shipped from the European Union to other parts of the world. As we both might know that consumption as well as waste production in the European Union has been increasing, but there's not enough capacity to take care of the waste properly in Europe. So Europe does send some of its waste outside of the European Union. So my research involves looking at what really happens and where does the waste go? Is it recycled? How is it recycled? Does it create better material when it's recycled, or does it worsen the material? So I look into all these aspects of transboundary waste.
Very interesting. And so what happens with the waste from the European Union?
It really depends on the context. So I cannot just say this happens, because for instance, I look at secondhand electronic and electric items. For example, you buy a phone, after 3 years, it's getting a bit slower, and you buy a new one and you sell it, or you donate, or you trade in. So what happens to those phones? Because of course, if you don't want it, then most likely somebody else in the European Union would not want it as well. So it goes to other parts of the world. And my research looked at such devices going to Nigeria. What it found is in Nigeria, the secondhand products do not last as long as possible. So maybe the phone that goes to Nigeria works for 8 months or 12 months. Then afterward, then it becomes e-waste, which is quite toxic because it has all the toxic elements in the motherboard. And the second problem with this is Nigeria does not have the same capacity as the European Union to process all this toxic waste in electronic devices. And also the other problem is, since circular economy really wants to retain the value in products and in waste, a sound recycling is not ensured in Nigeria. So if you look at the case of secondhand electronic and electric shipment, we find that it is not very circular and not sustainable. And on top, it really doesn't help making this quite unequal world more equal. What I mean is that by sending responsibility for e-waste management, which is European e-waste, to some other countries, it doesn't really help making the world equal, because it's an act of injustice if you are sending waste to somebody who does not have the capacity to deal with the waste properly. So it's a bit more complicated. Even reusing secondhand items can cause injustice somewhere else.
Right, but if I hear it correctly, the injustice also comes from the fact that those materials are sent there as secondhand electronics, which in theory could be potentially used by people in Nigeria, for instance. But what happens, it's actually that the EU is exporting waste and not products that could be used. Is that correct?
Well, exporting waste is not legal, but exporting secondhand products, it's legal to do so. But what happens is there's no functionality test when Europe ships waste to, let's say, Nigeria. We went to Netherlands in the port of Amsterdam, and we noticed there's a volunteer, old guy sitting there testing devices and saying, oh, it works. He plugs in the device and he sees a green light, and he says it works. And there are tons and tons of those devices. They just select a few. And if I plug in my computer and it turns on, doesn't mean it works. You know, if it's slow, maybe it's outdated. All these things are not checked. So what we think would be only fair is, if you're sending secondhand device to other countries, make sure it works. And it would be even better, make sure it works for 2 years, 3 years, 5 years, and not just becomes e-waste in 1 year, you know?
Right. So you're talking about a certain warranty that should be allocated to those products, correct?
Yes, I think so. But also, we are talking even more than just warranty. We are even saying that European producers who are responsible for processing their electronic waste in Europe. So if a Dutch company sells a phone in Netherlands, then the company is responsible to take care of the phone when it becomes e-waste after the consumer discards it. But this responsibility does not transfer when it goes to Nigeria, even though consumers or the structure of waste governance makes the producer responsible for managing electronic waste. So we also are asking that this producer responsibility also transfers from Europe to other places, no matter where the secondhand items are going. And it is just a basic notion of fairness and equity.
That was it only fair. I mean, otherwise you end up with double standards.
Exactly.
Yeah. And is Nigeria the only country experiencing this with transboundary European e-waste? Or in your research, have you discovered other patterns?
Nigeria is currently the biggest place, maybe Ghana as well. West Africa has been a hotspot for European secondhand products, and through them, some electronic waste. But it used to be China before, and the process of shipping waste is mostly focused on cost minimization and maximizing profit. That also means that the waste finds a destination whichever is cheaper, and the cheapest destination are those which doesn't have a lot of policies to manage waste. So if you look at the bigger timescale, this destination are shifting from one place to another. For example, with plastic waste, China used to import all the plastic waste in the world. But since 2018, China stopped importing plastic waste. Then the plastic waste moved to other countries around China. Now, a lot of European waste goes to Turkey. But let's say tomorrow, Turkey says, okay, we don't want to import everything from Europe, then it will find some other place. So then the shifting geography is also interesting. And this also calls for some principles that guides the trade, so that even if the geography shifts from one place to another, there's a basic sustainability, fairness, equity guaranteed, no matter where the waste is sent.
Right, that would seem only fair. Did you and your team explore a bit how this sustainability framework, those kind of rules, so to say, would what shape they would take?
I think first thing is understanding the context. For example, I did my research in Nigeria, but also in Vietnam, but those two countries are completely different contexts. One could say, oh, they are both low-income countries or emerging economies, but that's where the similarities start and end. So if you want to propose some interventions, you have to work with the context. You have to work with local people. You have to work with all the people in the value chain if you really want to make it work. And that takes a lot of work. And also, it's not as like, oh, look at me, my research solves the global problem. No, it has to be contextual. But there are some principles we point out in the Vietnamese research that in the value chain of waste, there's a lot of interactions. And right now, the interactions are mostly based on exploiting each other in order to maximize profit and saving costs. What you propose is such interactions should be mutually beneficial, and not just with the people in the value chain, but also the environment. So then this kind of ecocentric principle of creating harmony in any interactions. So one way to implement this would be to make sure that any waste governance has also the ethical dimension, because so right now ethics is frankly lacking when you're making waste policies. And maybe ethics, some kind of ethics is there in the Dutch policy, in the European policy, but it's really lacking when the waste goes to other countries. And the ethics is important. also transparency is quite important, because if you want to be accountable, every step of the value chain has to be transparent. And I always think to myself, like, if we can trace our tomatoes from, I don't know, from Spain, or avocados from Mexico to Europe, why can't we trace our waste? It's just a matter of political will, right? Because waste has been harming people and hurting people when it's shipped to countries that do not have the capacity to process it properly. So, and talking about political will, this focus on justice has to be deliberate, not just talking about justice or just transition, but really implementing it and investing in it. And this might mean you pay a bit more for processing your waste, but it guarantees that the world is a better place, for not just for one person in one country, but globally.
Right. So a lot of walk the talk for politicians on that aspect. But in your so you've done research in Nigeria, Vietnam. I know you've been a bit in China as well. What do people in these countries think about the situation with the transboundary secondary products, some of them, some of which, or a lot of which, is turns out to be waste?
Yeah, the thing is, this thing is not very transparent. So only if you do research, you know a bit, but then you really hit a brick wall, because you can never get enough data. You just get bare minimum data, and you can't really make sense if the thing is sustainable, just, fair, or circular with the data we have right now. And when I talk to people in those countries, a lot of them really are shocked that the countries are importing waste. And the first reaction in Vietnam, at least, was like, how come we don't manage our own waste, domestic waste, but we import waste? Which is, I think, the intuitive reaction for people. Why take waste if we haven't figured out a way to manage our own waste? And of course, this is very complicated, because Vietnam is a manufacturing hub. It's like the kitchen of the world. Almost a lot of things you own might be made in Vietnam. So, you know, kitchen is a dirty, messy place unless you clean it. And kitchen also needs ingredients, since there's a big demand of recycled plastic content in the things you buy. Vietnam needs this plastic, and the domestic plastic is not clean enough for them to recycle. So they depend on importing plastic from all around the world. So it's a symbiotic relationship. It can be a very, like I said, a relationship built on symbiosis, benefiting each other. But the way it works right now is everybody in the value chain, not everybody, most people in the value chain just exploit each other to maximize profit.
So if we're talking about the value chain, then, I mean, I suppose you also perhaps explored the upstream of that value chain. Do you have any insights?
Upstream, the manufacturing process, you mean?
Like pretty much the source of all the waste.
Well, I have not really researched into this, but of course, waste is a sign of life. If there are human beings, there's waste. But the amount of waste is depending on consumption, right? The upstream would be a lot, depending on a lot of consumption, mindless consumption. For instance, I keep thinking about the time we traveled to Cuba, and for me, that is a great example of circular economy, to reuse things and not to consume too much, to recreate things. Of course, it is a forced kind of circular economy by the circumstances. There's not a lot of abundance in Cuba. are the same in my childhood growing up in Nepal. Everything was quite circular. But the problem now we face is how do we manage all this waste that comes from a lot of consumption? And the waste is not focused too much in circular economy. For me, then the problem with circular economy is a lot of focus on new business models. Circular economy is almost as a green growth that somehow we can consume and never question our consumption and still be able to make this world quite sustainable and tackle all the ecological and social problems. But that should not be the case. For me, the circular economy is also an opportunity to rethink consumption, like you said, upstream to begin with. Do we really need this? And if you look at the literature, one of the first options in circular economy is R0, which is refuse, which is not to buy at all, right? So, and that's not been the focus. If you look at circular economy reports, it's all about new things, but it's like, do we really need this, right? And if we reduce consumption, then we reduce waste, then we don't have to ship a lot of waste to other countries. And this is basic common sense, right?
But not for some, of course. I mean, we are locked in a system of overconsumption, of course, in the West at least. And I think what you're saying about the upstream value chain and the kind of lifestyle we're leading hits a bit closer to home, right? Because if you're shipping cargoes of cargo ships of e-waste or secondary product, secondhand product, whatever you want to call it, right, across the ocean, it's out of sight, out of mind. But the source of it all is really in our day-to-day life. And yeah, talking about that, I was wondering if you could relate your research findings to us, to, let's say, normal people who are not involved in academia, people who are not involved in politics. But what's the kind of message, your take home message you would have for us?
My research mostly focuses on governance of waste. So I look at policies, and of course, when I do research, I try to see how can my research be useful, and not just for academic purposes like publication, but also how is my research relevant to society and policies. And together with our team, we kind of have three broad messages in order to make waste management a bit circular. So in Europe, since the early 90s, there's a thing called extended producer responsibility, which I talked a bit before. It basically makes producers of the waste responsible for managing the waste. And it has functioned quite well in the sense, if you look at collection of waste, recycling of waste, they're high percentages. But if you dig deeper, then you really see that the high percentages of collection and recycling doesn't really translate to circularity or sustainability. So we have three intervention. The first is there's been very wide focus on recycling this, recycling that. We need to shift. If we want a true circularity, then we need to reuse, we need to repurpose. There are many other alternatives, and recycling should be the last option. And talking about recycling, I was just reading this Greenpeace report from the US, and it says only about 5% of the plastic in the US is recycled, which is just insane. Only 5%, even though there's collection and all this process is set up. So the first thing, coming back to European context, is there should be a focus on other things, other value retention option, and not just recycling. And this leads to the second intervention, that we need to include more actors, a local repair person, companies that refurbish things in the EPR structure. Currently, the EPR structure only consists of producers and recyclers and a middleman or organization that connects them. But we need to make it wide open for all actors to get involved. And we even propose that civil society organizations, concerned citizens, should be involved, not just business people, so that it reflects a wider and plural value system and not just money, money, efficiency, efficiency. And the last thing, which is kind of my research, is currently the waste management practices in Europe or the EPR does not really include the international dimension. Once the waste leaves the national or the European boundaries, nobody really cares about it. And this has to be really brought in, and you have to look at the whole value chain of waste, not just in your own country, if you want to be fair and just. And for me, this is an important research as well, because when you are shipping waste to other countries, that has been historically not been equal, you are just making them more unequal. You are not empowering them. And if we want to tackle sustainability challenges, we need to all work together and not just, you know, do things to not empower others or to harm others. So circular economy, in for me, gives a tremendous opportunity to do the right thing, to manage waste, to retain the value of resources and products for as long as possible, but also fix this broken system of injustices associated with waste shipments since the 80s. So for me, it's a great opportunity, and as a researcher, I'm really hoping some of the findings from our research and similar research really goes to the policymakers and equity, justice, the social dimension. Humans are also part of the circular economy, on top of green growth.
Absolutely. I think you make such a good point there, and you really hit home, because we know that the initial concept of circular economy was pretty much business oriented and sold as a green growth paradigm. But what we're seeing today, and with very relevant research like yours and the research that's coming from the Copernicus Institute and your team, we see demand to bring more transparency, more social value, to work to reduce those unequal power dynamics that we've historically experienced, right, between the global north and the global south. And I like how you wrap it up also in terms of, again, we're not reinventing the wheel, no? I mean, 10, 20 years ago, you would go to a shoemaker to fix your shoes, right? That's not happening nowadays. You'll go to a person to fix your watch, for instance. We need to bring that back. It's not something that we're innovating. It's just we're taking common sense features that have been there all along. And just to clarify, I guess by EPR, you mean extended producer responsibility, right? Yeah, so thank you so much. And I specifically like that you see circular economy as an opportunity, and I think this is how we should definitely approach it and try to make it as inclusive, transparent, and socio-ecologically beneficial as possible. On that positive note, I think we will conclude our lovely chat here, and I thank you so much, Kastub, for taking the time. I mean, there is an 8-hour difference between us, so I appreciate that even more. And you know, just for our listeners, in case they want to get in touch with you and maybe have a chat, or maybe they have questions, how should they proceed?
The best way to reach out to me would be to email me, k.thapa@uu.nl. I'm sure you can put that in the podcast link somewhere. And I'm always open to new interactions, new ideas. For me, the more plurality in ideas, the better. Yeah, so if you like my work and are curious, or if you have something to contribute, feel free to reach out to me, please.
Well, you heard Kastub. All right, thank you so much again, and have a lovely rest of the day then.
Thank you. See you.
Bye.